You guys, welcome back to Flickers of Fear. This is my little personal movie review show on which I talk about just various horror movies, whatever ones I feel like watching, you know. No rhyme or reason to the ones I come up with. And this one right here is kind of an interesting pick. This is one that I guess I've been seeing it on a lot of lists, like I said, because I usually kind of troll through other people's lists of recommended horror movies. And if something sounds cool or something sounds kind of like right up my alley, then I'll put it on my list and finally get around to watching it. This is 2016's The Neon Demon. Now, what I heard from a lot of this one, a lot of reviews of this movie, was that both critical and audience reactions to it were very, very mixed. Some might say violently mixed, in the sense that when this movie premiered, I believe it premiered at the Cannes Film Festival, you got kind of half the audience booing and half the audience giving like a standing ovation. And I've often found that movies like that are kind of like the most interesting ones to watch, even when they're not, I don't know, even if they're not like quote unquote objectively good movies or something like that, it's like there's always something interesting going on. They're usually worth watching, if only to see like what was causing this wildly schizophrenic kind of like reaction to it. So this was one of those movies. So of course, you know that I had to immediately go out and see it. Now I'm going to come down on the side of I actually loved this movie, but I can see if it's not for you. This is a very, very arty, not as arty as some that I've talked about on here now that I'm thinking about it, but it is a very kind of like, you could even say it was style over substance, although I guess that's a fair criticism, but in a lot of ways, I think it was intentional. You know, or I could say it was like people thought it was slow or vapid. I saw that word thrown around and stuff like that. I don't agree, but like I said, I do kind of feel like if you did have that reaction to it, then, you know, that's entirely up to you. But for whatever reason, this movie really, there was just something for me personally, there was just something really hypnotically compelling about it. It probably helped that I kind of knew sort of what it was about, like just in a very, very vague sort of fashion, but I didn't really read any, you know, reviews of it or any plot synopses or anything like that prior to seeing it. So I just kind of like let it happen. So I didn't really know where it was going, what it was about. And I think that kind of helped, because this movie is, it's classified as a psychological horror movie, which it is, but it's one of those kind of like art house horror movies where for a long time, it's not, the horror isn't really overt, but then it gets like more and more horrific as it goes on. And there's some stuff in here that's pretty, like for general audiences, would be pretty off-putting. Let's just say that. So let me say now, because, you know, in case you're thinking about watching this movie and you're like, okay, well, Jenny, what are you talking about? Like, because I don't know if I want to watch this movie, if there's some really fucked up shit in it. So I'm going to say right now, this is going to probably be a spoiler review in the sense that this is a hard movie to talk about without saying what happens in it. And as I mentioned, if you had been interested in seeing this movie, but are like, yeah, I don't want to see it if there's like really fucked up shit, then I'm going to have to tell you what the fucked up shit is so you can determine like whether you want to watch it or not. It's, I don't know. It's kind of like a catch 22. But yeah, so I will say this probably will have some kind of spoilers, but I don't really think even knowing the plot of this, it does have a plot. It does have, you know, it does have things happen like action in it and stuff. But the plot, again, is not really the main threat. This is almost kind of like a fairy tale type of movie. It's very visual. It's a very, it's more like a movie that really needs to be like kind of experienced. It's very heavily, you know, as I said, heavily visual, heavily symbolic. It's almost kind of like an occult type of thing, but not super overtly. So, you know, if I know I'm trying to become kind of being vague on purpose, but it's kind of like I said, it's kind of a hard movie to talk about without spoiling a lot of things about it. So just know that going in. Now there, okay, so there's the fucked up shit that's in this. There is a scene of what is essentially female on female necrophilia. So there's like a necrophilia scene, which a lot of people were kind of grossed out by. There is a lot of gore, as there is cannibalism. There is something for everybody. There's a scene at the end with a woman barfing up another woman's eyeball and another woman eating it. So if any of this sounds like it's going to gross you out, then probably you want to avoid this. Like I said, for about the first half of this movie, it's a little over 2 hours long, something like that. About the first half of this movie, it comes across more as a very beautiful, visual, psychological type of story. And then it kind of goes into like this really shocking, like exploitative type of imagery. Kind of reminded me a little bit. It reminds me of, you know, if you like stuff by like Gaspar Noé, or if you liked, you know, shit like, if you like something like Antichrist or something like that, then this would probably, this is in that same kind of wheelhouse. Also has a little bit of like a surrealist kind of bent to it, has a little bit of a giallo sensibility to it as well. A little bit of David Lynchian, had some kind of Mulholland Drive, a little bit of a vibe to it, or Lost Highway. So if that sounds like something that you would like, then you would probably like this. Like I said, it seems like there's like a lot of mixed kind of shit about this. So even among people that have liked Nicholas Winding Refn's other movies, which I know a lot of people have seen Drive. I haven't seen it yet. Only God Forgives was another one that he did. I saw Bronson, which I loved. But he's made like a bunch of movies, and it does really seem like, I don't know if I'd say that's what he's going for, in the sense that he wants to be shocking or provocative. But even if he was, and I think I've talked about this before, I'm just kind of like, maybe when I was talking about Climax, but you know, I kind of feel like it's a little bit of an empty criticism to say that a filmmaker is just deliberately trying to be provocative. I'm like, well, what do you want? Like, do you want somebody to make a film that they just don't want anybody to care about? Or they're just like, oh, you know, that was pretty good. I mean, you know what I mean? It's almost kind of like, I'm not saying you have to go out on purpose and like make a movie like shocking just to be shocking. But it's a fine line between that and kind of like coming out and making the movie that you want to make, and then having everybody get like all offended because, you know, it's got shocking content, or you think that they're being shocking just for shocking's sake or whatever. I don't know. It's kind of like a whole discussion to have. As I said, because I'm a big horror nerd, I did not find any of the sequences in this movie to be particularly offensive. You know what I mean? Necrophilia is yucky and everything like that, but it's like, I don't know. It didn't bother me as much as it maybe would bother somebody else, I guess. You know, but I'm just a weirdo like that. Antichrist also didn't bother me all that much. So I don't know. I don't know if that means I'm jaded or I'm like a weirdo or whatever. I loved Antichrist, by the way, but it didn't disturb me like to my core or anything like that. And this one didn't either, but that's not like a ding on it. So basically this movie follows a young girl named Jessie, who's played by Elle Fanning. Now, she's only 16 years old, and she travels out to LA, and she's going to be a model. Although, she goes to, you know, the agency or whatever, and they tell her, you know, tell everybody you're 19. I guess her parents are dead or are not in the picture or whatever. So she just kind of goes out there. Now, the interesting thing that happens here, and like I said, this is kind of where the fairy tale element comes into it, is that Jessie's character is very much this kind of, when she first comes to LA, she's just this very like wide-eyed, innocent, you know, she's from Georgia, and it's like she, you know, says to a guy who's sort of her boyfriend, photographer later on, that, you know, when she was a kid, she used to kind of like lay out and look up at the stars, and she thought the moon was looking at her. That's kind of significant. But she was saying that she realized that she didn't have any talent. You know, she couldn't sing and she couldn't write or anything like that, but she was pretty, and that she would be able to make a lot of money off that. So that's kind of like how she fell into this line of work or whatever. So she arrives in LA, as I said, sort of a wide-eyed, you know, naive, I guess you would say. And, but very quickly, it comes to pass that everyone in LA that she interacts with is immediately taken with her, almost like she has some kind of power. And that power is kind of implied to be is because, one, because she's really young, she's only like 16 years old, and also because her beauty is seen by all of the characters as being pure, as in she's not like manufactured. She's like a very natural looking beauty, because there's like a lot of stuff in this movie about her being this kind of pure, like purity, natural beauty, as opposed to all these other women in LA that have had all this work done and stuff like that. And it's like a contrast between those two things. So she shows up at like this agency with Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, to having like a little cameo there as kind of the head of the agency or whatever, that interviews her. And she basically sets her up. She's like, yeah, you've got it. And, you know, whatever that is, that indefinable quality that makes a star. And she's like, you know, you're really going places. So immediately, like, all of this stuff starts to happen. There's also another major character played by Jenna Malone, whose name is Ruby. And she is a makeup artist. And she pretty quickly, like, pretty much in the first scene of the film, very clearly has some kind of designs, either sexual and or otherwise, toward Jesse, and basically gets Jesse to go to this really hip, like, party at this big nightclub, where Ruby introduces her to two other models whose names are Sarah and Gigi. One of them is played by that really tall blonde, what's that girl's name? I can't remember. That really tall blonde woman that was in Mad Max Fury Road. She was one of the brides, the pregnant one. Yeah, because I was, the whole time I was watching The Neon Demon, I was like, God damn it, I've seen that woman before, and I knew her voice. And then I realized, oh yeah, it was Mad Max Fury Road, because, you know, I've seen Mad Max Fury Road so many times that it's like she was very familiar to me. But it took me a minute to like kind of put those two things together. So immediately you're kind of led in. This is why I'm saying that this is kind of like a fairy tale type movie, because Ruby, Sarah, and Gigi are essentially, this isn't spelled out outright, but they seem like a witch's coven. They seem fascinated with Jesse, with her innocence, with her natural beauty, but they also seem to want to possess her or destroy her or something like that. So it's so the first like half of the movie is kind of this really, you're not really entirely sure what their motives toward her are. Like, you can kind of suspect, but just the way they're kind of like acting toward her is like really interesting. Now, it gets to a point where Jesse, because she has this indefinable purity, essentially, she starts kind of like plowing ahead of all these other models that have been there for longer and kind of know their way around, but they're a little bit older. A lot of them have had work done and stuff. And even though they are also very beautiful, because she is just so young and pure and natural, it seems like everybody, photographers, you know, fashion designers, stuff like that, are just riveted by her. And so she's kind of like getting jobs that a lot of the other women had wanted. And so a lot of resentment starts to build up. And as I said, even though this isn't kind of, this is more like a symbolic or like a subtext than it is overt, the three women that initially kind of like meet her or, you know, kind of interact with her at the party that are kind of like a coven, it almost kind of gets to a point where the entire movie almost becomes like this sort of ritual where they are trying to take from her whatever it is that she has that they don't have. So in that sense, they do actually want to possess her, possess the power that she has. So as I said, during the first half of the film, there's kind of like some weird scenes in there too that seem random, but like the more you think about them, the more they kind of fit in with this whole entire theme. Like, Jesse is living at this kind of seedy motel. The motel manager is played by Keanu Reeves, actually, who's playing like a super like kind of borderline, well, not even borderline, like a pedophile kind of creep. So there's that. He's great in it, by the way. It's not a huge role. He's just like in two or three scenes, but it's always nice to see him. So there's one point where she comes home to her hotel room, and there's actually like a wildcat in her room, and it's like torn her room all up. So as I said, there's these kind of things that are happening that hint toward the occult, I guess, in a way, but it's not real overt. There's kind of like these occult trappings or like witchcraft, or, you know, maybe that was a shapeshifter, or maybe that means, you know what I mean? So there's that kind of stuff going on. Now, there comes a point, as I said, prior to, you know, this one point in the movie, which is about at the halfway point, I think, if I'm remembering it correctly, there's this big fashion show, which all of the models are trying to, you know, get into. And Jesse basically waltzes into the place, and the fashion designer, the guy, is kind of like, yeah, you're it. You're going to like close the whole show. You know, you're going to be a star or whatever. And all the other girls are really, really pissed about this. Now, at this point, there's like a really long, like, visual sequence of Jesse kind of putting on this big, like, elaborate, like, black gown and everything like that. And then kind of, they never show her going down the runway or anything like that. It's weird because this movie, even though it's set in LA, it's very, the way it's shot is, like, really cool because it's, like, really, like, sterile. It's almost kind of like there's nobody else around but, like, the main characters. So it gives it this kind of like surrealistic kind of vibe to it, which I actually really, really dug. I will say too that the score for this is fan-fucking-tastic. I love the score. The visuals of this and, you know, the marrying of the visuals to the score and everything like that was just really kind of like, you know, hitting all my happy buttons. Like, I just really, really loved all the imagery in this. Just gorgeous, gorgeous looking movie, gorgeous sounding movie. As I said, you know, people could complain that it's style over substance. Okay, fine. You know, that the characters are not all that complex, which, yeah, I don't think I'd agree with that, but okay. That it's thinner on plot. But as I said, I don't really think was the main thrust of the movie. I'm sure he was trying to make a statement about beauty and about, you know, and almost kind of like the lengths that people will go to, the lengths that particularly women will go to have, you know, to possess this kind of power where everyone is looking at them, where there's, you know, like the most beautiful woman in the world or whatever. And it's just like what some people will go to get that attention, to get that stardom. And so, you know, and basically it's kind of like another sort of Hollywood, you know, chewing up women and spitting them out type of thing. So it's that kind of thing too, which, like I said, it's not a new theme. It's like there's been a lot of movies made with that theme, but, you know, there's been lots of movies made with lots of themes, and it's like no one's complaining that it's like, oh, is another one like that. You know, how many zombie movies have we had at this point? I'm just saying. But I mean, if you're gonna do something like that, if you make it as beautiful and as gorgeous and it's just like such a great like experience as this one was, then I don't have a problem with that at all. So during this fashion show, in which, like I said, you don't see anybody else, you don't see her really walking the runway. It's almost kind of like she's coming out in these, you know, there's a lot of like triangle symmetry or symbolism, which, like I said, is kind of hearkening back to like occult type symbols. It and giving the sense that like this whole movie is like a ritual, essentially, where Jesse is simultaneously, you know, the sacrificial victim, perhaps, of these three other women who are essentially like a coven of witches. But she's also coming into her own power, possessing her own, you know, coming to the realization of how beautiful she is and how she can use that to her advantage. How she becoming the word she uses, dangerous, because when she first arrives in LA, she's, like I said, she's very innocent. She seems very naive. You know, she seems very humble and very sweet. But after this one particular set piece where she's at this fashion show and she's walking through all these triangles and there's all these mirrors and she's like, you know, kissing herself in the mirror, it's almost kind of like she becomes a different person. She's come into her narcissism, I guess, and has owned it and possessed it. So after that point, she almost turns into a different person, in the sense that now she is, you know, empowered. Sounds like a positive word, and it's really not positive, because she has essentially gone over to the dark side of, you know, of this fashion designer whose name is Sarno, and like the other models, who their whole philosophy of life is beauty is the only thing that matters. And, you know, she has pretty much come to accept the fact that because she is beautiful, therefore she has worth. If she was not beautiful, she would be worthless. And she has accepted that truism in the course of the movie. And so at that point, like, her boyfriend, who tries to argue with the fashion designer Sarno, saying it's like, well, you know, isn't it what's inside that counts? But then Sarno kind of makes the point. It's like, you know, if she hadn't been beautiful, you wouldn't even have talked to her in the first place, even to get to know her. So you're kind of a hypocrite. So a lot of that kind of stuff is going on as well. Now, after this point, when she has become narcissistic, I'm assuming, you know, seeing this movie through the lens of, you know, it's all a ritual, I guess at this point she had to come into this narcissism and lose her former innocence for the ritual to work, I guess, because from this point forward, it becomes a much more straightforward horror movie. In the sense that she starts having a nightmare. She has a nightmare that Keanu Reeves, the motel manager, the sleazebag, that he comes in her room and is like sticking a knife in her mouth, you know, like it's very phallic. And when she wakes up from this dream, her doorknob is like rattling and she's like freaking out. And she is able to keep him out. But then he goes into the next door motel room, which he has previously mentioned is occupied by a 13-year-old runaway girl, and proceeds to brutalize her there. They don't show that, but, you know, you can hear it from the other room. At which point, Jesse freaks out and she calls her friend, the makeup artist Ruby, and Ruby lets her stay at her house, which is kind of like a mansion, even though she says it's not hers. She says she's just house-sitting, but... they never really, you're led to believe that it actually is hers, but you're not really sure why she's lying about it. So at this point, Ruby, who is just as obsessed with Jesse as everyone else is, tries to make a move on her, but Jesse, who is still a virgin, pushes her away. And at this point, like I said, I think this was the scene after this where a lot of people maybe got upset and like walked out and stuff. Because at this point, because Ruby has been sexually rejected by Jesse, she goes to work at her second job, because she's not only like a makeup artist for models and fashion shows and stuff, she also is a makeup artist at the morgue. And just so happens that there's a corpse in there that looks kind of like Jesse, in the sense she kind of has blonde curly hair, she kind of looks similar. And, you know, there's a scene where she, you know, masturbates with a corpse. So I'm just saying, it's in there. So you know what I mean. And I gotta say, Jenna Malone like kicked ass in this one, because I feel like a lot of actresses would not have gone there. It's not super graphic, but I mean, it's, you know, it's suggestive enough that I can see how most people would be like, ew, you know what I mean, because it is kind of gross. But like I said, it didn't upset me that much, but I could see how like it would upset some people. So that was, so like I said, there is a scene like that in there. So just be warned. So at this point, what ends up happening after that is that when Ruby comes home, her and Sarah and Gigi have decided, okay, well, now is the time that we're going to, you know, get to the culmination of our ritual, I guess, if you want to like say it that way. So they basically push Jesse into an empty swimming pool, break her legs, and then they go down there and cut her up and eat her. And it's implied pretty strongly that by eating her, they have taken whatever power it was that she possessed that made everybody, you know, that made everybody be like fascinated with her. Problem is though, that one of the models, apparently this is the first time that she's done this and she can't really stomach it literally, because she gets sick. She starts, you know, kind of getting nauseated or whatever. And then she has to run off. There's a photo shoot with the two of them, you know, the two models. And she just starts feeling sick and she has to run away. And like I said, at this point, she barfs up Jesse's eyeball. And then the other model just kind of like looks, and then she stabs herself because she's like, I need to get her out of me. And then the other model just very casually leans over, picks up the eyeball out of the vomit and eats it. So we're led to believe that that model has gone through this ritual before. You know, so every time, I guess, like I said, and this is an implication, and maybe this isn't what the movie means, but I thought that because these three women essentially were like a, you know, like I said, a coven, because there's a lot of triangles and moons and, you know, big cats and things like that, that they're kind of like, it has like a lot of occult trappings to it. And I think there's even a point like near the end where Ruby, the makeup artist, is like walking around with no shirt on, and she has like kind of all these occulty looking tattoos. So she's kind of like the mastermind behind this. So we're led to believe that at least Ruby and one of the other models have maybe done this before, that like every time this very young, fresh-faced girl shows up in LA, they kind of like, you know, put their talons into her and essentially consume her to get some of that power, which you do see like does actually end up working in the end, not for the one model that stabs herself and throws the eyeball up, but for the other one who, like I said, has presumably done this before and, you know, starts to get work and starts to get more notice again, even though she's a little bit older. So as I mentioned before, this is definitely, definitely not a movie for everybody. And totally, I can see why some people would hate it. You know, I feel like Nicholas Winding Refn's, most of his movies seem like pretty polarizing one way or the other. And it's easy to see why, but honestly, there was just something about this one that I really, really dug. I mean, I just, even though there's long stretches without much dialogue, even though, you know, it's, you could say it was slow in the sense, I didn't find it slow, but maybe some people would. But to be honest with you, I just like, I started watching it and just like from the very first frame, I was just like riveted to the story. It was like, it was almost like a hypnosis, like just the, I mean, the visuals help, you know, the score helps, but I was also really fascinated by the kind of theme of it and the kind of theme of this unspoiled beauty, like coming there and then these other, you know, these essentially witches like coming in, like wanting to consume it. So it was almost kind of like a little bit, I guess you could say it was kind of like the Suspiria remake a little bit as well, but not quite the same, because when they remade Suspiria, it was kind of like more of like a drab color palette. Whereas this one is much more new retro wave giallo-esque. It's like, you know, everything's like red and purple and green and hot pink and, you know, and it's just kind of, you know, and just like some of the photo shoots that she does with like all the jewels on her face and glitter and all this other kind of stuff. And it's just like fantastic. A lot of people have compared this to Black Swan too, which I can see that a little bit in the sense of identity. There's a lot of mirrors, you know, narcissism, that type of stuff. So if any of that, like I said, sounds like something you would be into, then definitely check it out. It's on Amazon Prime. You know, like I said, it seems like it's gotten really mixed reviews, but I really loved it, and I like weird-ass movies like this. More people need to make weird-ass movies. Even, like I said, even if they fail at what they were trying to do, they're still interesting to watch. It's like the worst thing a movie can be is just like boring or nobody gives a shit about it, which is why every time I hear that a movie like this got such a polarizing response, I always immediately want to see it because I'm curious. Anything that gets that strong of an emotion, either love it or hate it, probably has something interesting, at, you know, interesting enough, at least for me to watch it. And this definitely does have that. So I don't know if any of you guys have seen it. Like I said, it's not a straightforward horror movie, but it is kind of like an art house horror movie. And like I said, it's very much a visual experience as well. I kind of wish I'd seen it on the big screen, but you know, what are you going to do? Came out a few years back, and I don't even think it played in my part of Florida, so I probably wouldn't have been able to see it anyway. But this is definitely one that needs to just kind of be experienced. It's a sensory experience, but it also has, like I said, it has a deeper thematic type of thing, and kind of like in a fairy tale occult type of sprinkling on top of it. So if that sounds cool, definitely check it out. As I said, it's on Amazon Prime, and I think it's also on Blu-ray if you want to go that route. But yeah, I really dug it. If you've seen it, let me know if you loved it, if you hated it, if you were indifferent toward it. I really haven't seen anybody be indifferent toward it, but maybe you were. There's takes all kinds, really. But yeah, talk about it down in the comments. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.